Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
I'm surprised to see your suitcase at the door. Remember the good times, don't you want some more?
Don't you want it?
It's not a perfect love, but I'll defend it. Cause I believe it's what God intended. We gotta love
to go
away. Hey, it's not over between you and me.
It's not over, I don't want to be free.
What has been joined by God?
By God!
I can hear those words spoken as it stood. Making vows to love as times were bad or good.
Don't you want it?
I'm convinced that what is meant to be will be.
It will be.
Even the stars declare that you belong to me.
We got love to go.
Oh, it's not over between you and me.
It's not over.
I don't wanna be free.
What has been joined by God?
By God!
By God!
By God!
Let no man put us under.
Now.
Throw it away.
Throw it away. I don't wanna be free between you and me.
It's not over.
It's not over.
It's not over.
I don't wanna be free.
It's not over.
Cause I need it, cause I want it. I got to have you every day of my doggone life.
It's not over.
It's not over. No, 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 no.
It's not over.
It's not over.
It's not over.
Cause I need you, I want you, I got to have you, baby.
It's not over.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's not over.
Hey, 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 baby, baby, baby. Oh, shucks. Honey, let me tell you something. Now, they call me an Aquarius. Now, you know what that means? That means that no man in the world can let go of this Aquarius. You dig where I'm coming from, baby? So, like you see, I got something here that you don't ever want to turn down. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. Every day of my life. Ooh, baby. Ooh, baby. Come on and get you some more. I don't want to ever get married to nobody else but you, baby. You hear what I'm saying? You hear where I'm coming from? Oh, it's not over. It's not over between you and me. Hey, hey, oh baby, 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 baby. It's not over.
It's not over.
No, 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 no.
Because
I want you, because I have you, because I want you doing every day of my doggone life.
It's not
over. Hey, baby, baby, baby.
It's not over. 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 It's not over.
People of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to Street Player Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is Sunday, the 29th of June, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, you just heard the a cappella version of Let No Man Put Us Under by First Choice. And in listening to their vocals on this a cappella version, it is easily understandable why they were just phenomenal talent. I just have to tell you right now, anybody that can belt out a song like that in a cappella, you just know that they have the chops to actually be able to deliver a live performance unlike no other. Now, this song was actually recorded later on by the queen of hip-hop soul, Mary J. Blige, on her Mary album. So I hope you enjoyed it. So today, one of the talented ladies from 70s R&B group First Joyce, the lovely Wardell Piper, is stepping into the virtual lounge with me on A Touch of Grace. I'm just thrilled about having her as a guest. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and go into formal introductions, but let me go ahead and get Wardell on the line back with us, okay? It'll be just a moment.
Hello.
Hi, Wardell.
Hello.
Hi, Wardell. How are you?
Hi.
I'm
good.
So well, that's great. So what I wanted to do, I went on ahead and did a pre-intro to welcome the listeners to the show, Street Players, today. And we're going to talk about First Joyce, and we're going to also talk about your extraordinary life in entertainment. So allow me to do the next part of the intro, and then we'll go into the questions for the show. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So, listeners, I just want you to know that we have Wardell Piper from First Choice with us today here on A Touch of Grace. Now, First Choice is a talented trio of songbirds from Philadelphia, and they hit the scene back in the 70s, offering their heavenly harmonies to many great hits from Armed and Extremely Dangerous, Dr. Love, and the one I just played, Let No Man Put Asunder. They were signed to soul label Philly Groove Records and disco label South Soul Records. They were pioneers to early house and techno music, and their music has been sampled by many artists from Todd Terry, the Jungle Brothers, and again, as I mentioned earlier, Mary J. Blige. In addition to the heavenly harmonies, we were also bared witness to a stage presence that flaunted sex appeal and beauty without reservation or insecurity. They delivered glamour on a scale that inspired women around the globe, and they are an integral part of music history, forever captured by timeless recordings that we can listen to for decades to come. So as you already know, the lovely Wardell Piper is here with me today representing First Choice. So Piper, once again, excuse me, Wardell, welcome once again to the show.
Oh,
so how are you doing?
So much.
You're
fine,
welcome.
GD. I'm fine. I'm doing just fine. I'm really, really excited and happy to be on your show.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have you on the show. It is an honor. And for a legend, allow me to virtually bow at your feet for just bringing the great style to the stage. I really loved Armed and Extremely Dangerous. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be playing that a little later in the show. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to get to know you a little better. Is that okay with you?
Sure, that's fine.
All right. So first things first, where were you born and what was childhood like for Wardell?
Well, I came from a musical family early on. I started singing at the age of 5. I'm originally from Albany, New York. And it was pretty exciting back then. My mother, Lois, taught us gospel songs, and we would go to different churches, and that's pretty much how I got started. And then in 1968, we moved to Philadelphia, and I was in junior high school. I went to Robert Falk Senior High, and that's where I met Rochelle Fleming, who had formed a group called the Debonettes. And she asked me to be in the group after she heard me singing in the choir with her. And at that time, it was 4 of us. And later on, when we got accepted into Overbrook High School in their music magnet program, that's when we met Annette and brought her into the group. And then we decided that we were tired of the fashion shows and the talent shows, and we wanted to try and do this professional recording thing. And we sought out one of the real popular radio personalities in Philadelphia, WDAS. His name is George Woods. And we made an appointment with him, and he heard us, and he loved us, and he passed us on to Philly Grooves mobile, Dan Watson. And that's how we got started.
Wow. Well, I think that that's amazing. And one thing I can honestly say, Ward Ailes, I've been a lover of music for a long time. I'm 52 years old right now.
Okay.
I just know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually grew up listening to Philly Sound. I just love the artists that came out of Philadelphia because their music compositions were so lush and full, and most certainly if they laid it down in the studio, they could lay it down equally as good when you see them in person. So after the George Woods meeting, he introduced you to the record company that you signed with. Is that correct?
Yes, the original company, Stan Watson, was the original owner. He was the one that owned Philly Grooves Records, and that's where we got started. We worked with Al Felder and Norman Harris, and they created our sound through our first hit. It was like a local hit, This Is the House Where Love Died, that later on was redone by Patty Brooks in the disco era. And the B-side was One Step Away. And then we did Armed and Extremely Dangerous, which was a mega hit.
Definitely was. I was looking at the three of you on Soul Train, and I've looked again. You're all beautiful, just beautiful, and you were rocking what was very much the 70s, and those are the Froze, you know. And you guys were up there, and you were singing the song. So what was the very first song that you recorded? And I want to go back a little bit. So it was Rochelle Fleming and Annette, and you were the Debonettes.
Yes.
So did you sign as the Debonettes, or when you signed, did you become First Choice?
When we signed, they switched the name from the Debonettes to the First Choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And was there a symbolic description of why they decided that you were First Choice? Is there some type of philosophical reason behind the name First Choice?
Because Dan just, I guess, we were his first choice. You know, he just looked at us and said, he said he didn't like the name the Debonettes. And he said, "I'm gonna name you all the First Choice."
Wow, wow!
Yeah.
And I have to tell you right now, when I got a chance to watch the Temptations movie, and they were sent outside to actually find an appropriate name for the group, and they came up with some of everything. So, were there other titles that were pitched before just landing at the name First Choice?
No, actually, that was the first and only name that we were given after the Debonettes.
That's amazing. So it was you struck platinum the very first time. And so I want to step back a little bit because I know that you started singing early. So actually, how old were you when you realized that you had the ability to sing?
Individually or collectively, you mean with the group?
Well, you know what? Let's talk about you because you're here today. If you know when the other girls started, that would be great, too, because as we mentioned prior to Showtime, you're representing the group, so I definitely want to make sure that there's a representation for them. So let's start with
you. Certainly. I started out singing when I was 5 with my family. It's like it was myself, my sister Dee and Charlita, and my brother Glenn. We started out singing when I was 5, so we were stair-step kids. So it was like the ages were 5, 4, 3, and my sister was just a little baby. And as far as the group went, we were 16 when we first went in Sigma Sound Studios and did This Is the House Where Love Died. That was the first song that we did with Norman Harris and Al Felder. Al Felder wrote the lyrics, and Norman Harris wrote the music. And I remember we all were at Rochelle's house, and we were learning this new song, and it was so exciting. And then we went into Sigma Sound, and we recorded it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is definitely history. So you touched a little on how you cultivated this wonderful talent that you have. You said that you were tired of the fashion shows and you were tired of the talent shows. And so I want to talk about that time because it's definitely an important part of really what led you to becoming a global known group. So do you remember the very first time that you performed in front of an audience?
Yes, we did my mother's fashion show, and it was at a place called Barber's Hall that was on Oxford Street in the heart of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And we sang a cappella, just about everything we sang. I remember we did one of the songs that Rochelle had created. She had written a song called Darling, and we sang that same song for George Woods when we auditioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we did a couple of other talent shows around the city. And as I had stated before, we just got kind of tired. We really appreciated every opportunity, but we were really ready for the big time. We really felt like we had a great sound. We felt like we did, and we wanted to move on and try, you know, the recording industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the opportunity with Stan Watson, Norman Harris, and Al Felder, and it was just amazing. It was an amazing time because we were still in high school, and when This Is the House Where Love Died came out, we were in 11th grade, and I remember we were in Overbrook High School, and everybody heard our record on WDAS, and they were, like, so excited. Oh, my God. They were so excited. Here we have a group called The First Choice that's affiliated with our high school. Everybody was congratulating us, and we were really, you know, feeling really proud. And that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that that was definitely a magical time for you. So here you are in the 11th grade, and there's a song playing on the radio for you. And, of course, at that time, radio was it. We didn't have, like, the video channels and YouTube.
That's right.
And Facebook and all of these things. So how did the word spread outside of Overbrook High School? How did the world come to know? Because you had signed with the record label. So how did they get the word out about the group First Choice?
Well, WDAS was a prominent radio station in Philadelphia. It was like the voice of the black community. So, you know, that's all we listened to was WDAS at the time. That was the only station for a very long time that most of Philadelphia listened to, if not all of Philadelphia. So we, you know, and the surrounding areas, the tri-state areas, New Jersey, Delaware, all that's affiliated with, you know, the range as far as the frequency that the radio station projected. And so we were so excited because, I mean, to be on DAS was just the ultimate, you know, even before we even got an opportunity to go nationwide and then international. It was just really just awesome. And Philadelphia is such a close-knit community of homes and its culture, so that, you know, everybody, it's a big city, but like most places, it's a small community. So a lot of people know one another. And, you know, it was just an amazing time then. Philadelphia, you know, we had Philly International, and, you know, it was just an amazing time then for music in Philadelphia. So to be affiliated with and associated with that was just, you know, it was like a dream come true for all of us.
I can imagine. So here you are. You're in the 11th grade at Overbrook High School. You meet somebody at a radio station who refers you to someone at a record label. You guys wind up getting signed. You're given the name First Choice. Then the word started spreading, and you started becoming a nationwide known group. So when it shifted from local to nationwide, What was that experience like? Was it overwhelming, or did you just go with the flow?
Oh, it was absolutely overwhelming. I mean, you know, it's like every singer's dream to have a hit record, and then when it actually happens, you know, it's just like a dream come true. You just, it's surreal, you know, and that's pretty much how it was for us. We just could not believe this was happening for us. I mean, we had worked really hard. You know, we rehearsed all the time. We were always over each other's homes rehearsing. You know, we took turns having rehearsals at our, you know, our parents' homes. And it was just so amazing to see that our efforts had not been in vain, that we had indeed, you know, we really had what we thought was a really great sound. And people loved our harmonies. They loved Rochelle's vocals because she does great leads. And, you know, myself, Rochelle, and Annette also sang gospel in Overbrook High School in a group called the Overbrook Singers. So we, you know, we all three of us came from a gospel background. And so we're just, you know, we just took that and, you know, we just took it to the next level in secular music.
Yeah, and so I want to talk about that a little bit. I know that there was a movie I saw with Nat King Cole and Eartha Kitt,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
his father was a minister, and he
okay.
totally objected to Nat King Cole singing secular music. So
mm-hmm.
from your family, because like you said, you were singing in church, was there ever a moment in time where that became a situation that you had to explain or just rise above as far as singing secular as opposed to gospel?
No. All three of us came from that background, that gospel background. All of our parents were church, were in the church and loved God. And I remember my mother saying to me, "You can do anything you want to, as long as you put God first." She actually encouraged me to go into secular music. She was so supportive. She was always at the shows. You know, she just, you know, my mother never discouraged me ever from doing whatever it was that I wanted to do. And she knew that music was something that she had introduced me to and taught me pretty much, you know, what it entails to go before an audience and give my all. And, you know, when it came time for me to join the group and, you know, we just continued on. And once we went into the recording industry, my mother and Rochelle's mother and father and Annette's mother, they were so supportive of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were rooting us on and, you know, we had so much encouragement. And from the whole Philadelphia community, it was just, it was amazing. It really was amazing.
It almost seems to me, it sounds like it was an amazing time, and that you were surrounded by love and you were surrounded by people
yes.
that encouraged your confidence so that you
mm-hmm.
would be able to get out there in front of those audiences and do what you do. So you talked about your mom kind of coaching you along. Now, was your mom, and I hope I didn't miss this, was your mom a professional singer, or was this just something that she just was gifted with and knew the tricks of the trade to actually be able to teach you?
Actually, my mother had a brief stint with a record deal herself at an early point in her life. And, of course, back then, you know, you didn't always have the success that maybe later on we found. My mother didn't have that support of success, but I think deep down inside, she always wanted her offspring to get that opportunity. And when she found out that I really loved what I was doing, you know, she introduced it to us, but I didn't necessarily have to like what I was doing, but I loved it. And
mm-hmm.
you know, she encouraged that, and my grandmother really was a great, she had a great voice. She had like a contralto voice, but she only sang gospel. She never wanted to do anything outside of that. But my mother, would do like plays, and my mother was involved in a lot of the community activities, and when it came to anything like that, she was just a part of it, and she encouraged me to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I had so much support from her. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like she said, well, you know, you can't do it because, you know, I go to church, and like some stories you hear, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that for any of us. All three of us were, as I said before, really encouraged by our parents, so proud of us.
I think that's wonderful. Again, I just think that for parents who are able to support the dreams that their children have as opposed to them wanting their children to follow their dreams, I think that it's incredible. And I honestly feel that, you know, stepping into the industry with that type of support in back of you definitely
mm-hmm.
gave you the confidence to actually be able to deal with an industry that can chew you up and actually spit you out. So let's talk. Yeah,
that is so true. Yes.
It is.
That is so true.
Well, yeah, I just love music so much. And
mm-hmm.
for me, like the tragic stories of like the Michaels, the Marvins, the Donnies,
yeah.
Hathaways, you know,
yeah.
and these people
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
the industry crushed, because I honestly believe that a lot of us as artists are very sensitive. And so...
Yes.
When you're stepping out on stage and singing, you're putting yourself in a very vulnerable position because
mm-hmm.
sometimes the fans, you know, it's just some people aren't just nice at all. So let's talk about that very first time. We talked about the recording studio. Let's talk
mm-hmm.
about that very first time on stage. Billy Brown of Ray Governor Brown, when he was on the show, said that by the time they hit the stage, they were already huge and his knees broke.
Right.
What was that
mm-hmm,
first
mm-hmm.
time like for Wardell?
With the group or as a single artist?
Well, you know what? You were a group. You guys were on the radio. So then you had to
mm-hmm.
go in front of your fans as a professional group. What was that
yeah.
like? Was there a lot of pressure?
Well, it was, you know, it was an amazing experience. I mean, I don't really think we felt pressure as much as we did excitement. You know, it was just, it was a different time back then as well. You
mm-hmm.
know, people were more supportive of you when you would go before them. It wasn't like, you know, later on when people were a little bit more critical of you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it really being that way. No, I don't remember being that way at all. Even when,
you know,
even when the girls, mm-hmm.
It almost
even when the group was on, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm, go ahead. Even when the group was on?
Well, I was going to say, even when the group went on Soul Train, you know, could just see so much enthusiasm, you know, from the audience and, you know, just about everywhere, you know, the performances were. You know, it wasn't really that way back then. We, you know, just so excited, you know, to do what we were doing.
Well, you know what I honestly believe, Wardell, knowing how an audience could be very brutal, I would just have to
mm-hmm.
say that you guys were good. You were that good where you sidestepped all of that because you were the real
yeah.
deal, you know. And when
mm-hmm.
you're the real deal, the
mm-hmm.
audience is going to give it up for you. So let's
exactly.
talk about... Yeah. You know, that's all
uh-huh.
it is that, you know.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's talk about the experience then, the first time you stepped on stage. How long did it take you to perfect the swag, the professional swag that you would be known for in appearances live on stage?
Wow, that's a good question. Only thing I can say is that I just attribute pretty much the professionalism came from just the fact that we just always practiced all the time. Every time I turned around, we were rehearsing. But we loved it. It was like a labor of love for all of us. And I know it might sound kind of corny, you know, to some people because of, you know, like, how could it be that perfect? But it just felt so great. It didn't seem like work. It didn't, you know, it was just, I don't know. I don't know any other way to
express.
We, absolutely, absolutely, exactly right. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly right. Yes. And I'm not going to say that we didn't have, I'm not going to say that we didn't have opposition. We didn't have the negatives that come along with this business. We did. But overall, you know, you have to love this business. You have to love what you're doing. And, you know, that's pretty much what, you know, overrules all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about that first tour. How did they approach First Choice to talk about that first tour, and where did you tour? Was it just on the East Coast, or was it a nationwide tour?
Wow. You know, after Armed and Extremely Dangerous, I had actually, I had gone in another direction, and the girls continued to tour and do their thing. They, you know, they went national and international, and then they went, after Stan, they went with South Soul Records and really became an international group. So I wouldn't really be the person that could really, you know, answer that, because by that time I had become like a single artist, and I had moved in another direction.
Well, let's talk about that, because so many, like Shalimar, who had Howard and Jody, who were, and that's just off the top of my head, and Teddy Pendergrass with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and Lionel Richie and the Commodores. When you decided to make that decision to become a solo artist, was that something that you always wanted to be, with a solo artist, or did it just come over time?
Oh, no. From the time I was 7 years young and I saw Diana Ross and the Supremes on the Ed Sullivan Show, I knew then that's what I wanted to do. So when I linked up with Rochelle in junior high school and she, you know, had formed the group, it was just a dream come true to be able to be a part of a group. And after Armed and Extremely Dangerous, you know, I went in another direction. I got, you know, I did some things in private life, and, you know, and then later on, the opportunity presented itself about, let's see, maybe about 4 years, 5 years later, after I had done Armed and Extremely Dangerous with the First Choice, that's when I got the opportunity to meet Reuben Cross and John Fitch, who had written Shame for Evelyn Champagne King. And excuse me, what they had done was they were putting together a female, an all-female band. And they were looking for a lead singer. So I auditioned, and they liked me. And that's pretty much how it happened for me. We had an A&R person to come down from RCA, and they really didn't like the concept of an all-female band, but they liked me. So Reuben and John decided that they would work with me as a single artist. And we went in the studio, and we did about, I guess about, well, we did about 5 songs. And then they shopped a deal for me in New York, and that's when we came. They went to Midsong Records, and Midsong wanted to sign me right away. And Midsong had Silver Convention, Carol Douglas, and so they signed me. And that was right in the heart of the disco era. And at the same time, Rochelle and I'm sorry not to cut you off, but at the same time, Rochelle and Annette had gone on with Soul Soul. So they were right in the heart of disco. It's almost like we were going in the same direction, and then now here it is, like years later after that, we're all back together full circle, which is such a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. And the question that I have as far as you becoming a solo artist at the time, What was the climate like between you ladies, because you guys were together and then you were going to go off and do your own thing? Was there a discussion that you guys had together and this is what you communicated to them, and did they give you your blessing or their blessing?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I left the group, we had left on great terms. It wasn't anything like people saw it. I elected to go in another direction because I knew what I wanted for my career.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I felt as though that I didn't want to just be, you know, a backup singer, you know, because I wasn't doing that with my family. I had done some leads, and I didn't have a problem with doing backup, but I just didn't want that to be solely what I did. So I moved in another direction, and really at the time when I answered the call for the all-female band lead role, you know, I really wasn't even looking. Once I left the group, I wasn't even really looking to pursue a solo career at all. I had gotten married, and I thought I was going to, you know, be, you know, a wife and raise kids. I had no idea that years after that I would have a solo career. So it was almost something like, you know, it was almost like God had blessed me to have this opportunity, you know, years after the group. That's pretty much how it was. And as far as, you know, I ran into the girls periodically through the years, even when I was, at one time there, I had a brief stint as a, when I left the group, I did do some solo things. Like I would run into them at Club Harlem in Atlantic City and Wonder Gardens and some of the other clubs that were in Atlantic City back in the 70s. But as time would have it, when Disco evolved and they were with Salsa Records and I was with Miss Song, we all had the same public relations and management. We had the same exact people handling our career. So I was, you know, we never really ran into one another then, but I knew about what they were doing and they knew about what I was doing. But we had the same people handling us.
Mm-hmm.
And Annette and I, we always stayed in touch. So, you know, and here we are now, full circle, coming back together. It's just amazing. Life is something. It's something
else.
You
know what it is?
I mean,
it really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was going to say that Rochelle, you know, she's doing her own individual thing. I'm doing my own individual thing. Annette went on to write with her husband, Gabriel Hardiman, hit records for Mickey Howard and Stephanie Mills. They wrote I Feel Good All Over and Love Under New Management. So, you know, Annette has continued also doing her own solo thing at, in secular and gospel. And Ursula has been doing Broadway and some other, you know, she's done Broadway plays and other things like that. And Annette and Ursula both have done backup for different renowned recording artists as well. So everybody continuously has done something on an individual basis, but now we're all coming back together to reunite as the First Choice so that our, you know, those that have followed our music will get an opportunity to see us all together again, which is really, really, we're all so excited about that.
And so was this choice, one thing I have to honestly say as I listen to the history behind the three of you, I can honestly say it's so refreshing to hear a story that is not, you know, laced with, you know, disgruntled bitterness, envy, you know, people just locked into their own thing and there being like this big argument type of thing. It sounds to me like you guys not only were born for this, but you had a pretty good grip on respecting one another to be able to cheer each other on as you go about doing your own individual things. And I think that that is incredible. And these are the stories that, you know, don't get as much hype. You know, people usually like to hear the dirt about what happened. So I think it's just refreshing that First Choice or excuse me, first choice, definitely, you know, carried that divine being of togetherness and love and kindness. So what we're going to do right now, Wardell, we're going to go ahead and listen to Armed and Extremely Dangerous, and I'm going to talk to you about the experience with the late Don Cornelius. I want to know what that experience was like for you. So just kick back for a minute. We're going to listen to Armed and Extremely Dangerous, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about that experience on Soul Train because that's history as well.
Okay.
All right. So, okay, great. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you've tuned in today, we are talking to Wardell Piper, the lovely Wardell Piper of First Choice, who was also a solo artist as well, who's been in the industry for several decades now, and she is just amazing still. So I know that you guys are going to remember this one. It's one of my favorites.
And right now it's three lovely and talented ladies from the city of Philadelphia who, along with their producer Stan Watson, were responsible for one of the biggest smashes of 1973 entitled Armed and Extremely Dangerous. Let's do it real good, gang, for the First Choice.
Okay, well, if you just tuned in, you just got through hearing Armed and Extremely Dangerous. That is when First Choice appeared on Soul Train, and that was Don Cornelius, who was a master at introducing talented guests to a visual audience. And Soul Train was definitely something that I remember as a little boy. And when I got a chance to go back and look at the footage of First Choice performing on that, first again, I have to say this, and I hope I don't make you blush too hard, but you guys were absolutely beautiful. My God, just stunning. So what was Dr.
Well, actually,
mm-hmm.
No, I just wanted to say that Joyce Jones was the person that you saw in my place on that particular event. Mm-hmm. She was the one that got to do Soul Train. I never got to do any pictures or any appearances with the girls. That's my voice on, you know, because I did the recording with Rochelle and Annette in the studio on Armin Extremely Dangerous. We were still, I was still a part of the group at that time, but I never got an opportunity to perform that song or, you know, or be seen in pictures or on TV with them. I had made my exit at, you know, a little before that.
Mm-hmm. So when you saw the performance and Armin Extremely
mm-hmm.
Dangerous really took off, so what were you
mm-hmm.
feeling like at that time? Was there ever something in you that felt like, oh, did I make the right decision? Or did you, were you just... Yeah.
I was so excited to hear the song on the radio. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I remember when This Is the House, Where Love Die came out, and we were all excited about it, and they played the B-side One Step Away. I was really excited to hear our stuff on the radio, but, you know, when Armin Extremely Dangerous took off, such a mega hit, it was like, wow, I'm like listening to this song on the radio and I'm hearing my voice, and I'm saying,
right.
Wow, this is amazing, you know, but... You know, it's kind of funny. I was so busy doing so many other things. I was just happy for the group. I was happy for Rochelle and Annette. Like I said, I would see them in Atlantic City because I was performing. I was still performing. I had somebody that was managing me, and he had me open up for the Three Degrees, Rudy Ray Moore at Club Harlem, and, you know, I did some other things, you know, up and down the coast. And so I was busy. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't doing something, but it just, you know, this felt kind of funny to hear my voice on the radio on that song and, you know, hear that it was such a big hit, but I was really happy for, I was happy for Rochelle and Annette. I was so happy for them. And whenever I would run into them, you know, we gave each other love. It wasn't like some people think. It wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I think that you're incredible. I got chill bumps talking to you. You're just one of God's very own. You know,
you guys got great attitudes.
You know,
thank you so much.
Guess that's, you're welcome. And that's a lesson for anybody out there listening in a group. You know, just because somebody
mm-hmm.
wants to do their own thing, it doesn't mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's a personal shot at you. It just means that, you know, this is what they were destined for. So let's talk about your solo career. First of all, what I want to know is on
mm-hmm.
that LP picture, the woman holding the snake, who is that?
That's me, holding the snake.
Wardell, I thought that was you. So
yes,
that's a real
me.
Snake, right? This is not Photoshop.
Yes,
you were holding a real snake.
Yes, I was holding a real snake.
So most people are afraid of snakes. So was
mm-hmm.
this something that you decided on, or was it someone else's vision for that album cover?
GD, it was the record company's.
Oh, Lord.
You know, yeah, they were the one. They asked me, did I mind posing with a snake? And I said, no, I don't mind posing with a snake. But, you know, I never anticipated that the actual pose would be, you know, like transposed and done in trick photography to for the end result. That was not the way I held the snake. And the snake was a python from the Bronx Zoo. Her name was Martha. And she was real cold feeling. If you saw like the photography in the beginning of our shoot, I was so scared, but I was frightened. I was, but her owner was holding her from a ladder and,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I, you know, I just grabbed, they told me where to grab, you know, grab her, and she was defanged, so she, the only thing she could have maybe done, but her owner was holding her, so she couldn't squeeze me or anything, because, you know, fortunately for me, her owner was there, but she didn't have any fangs, so I felt a little bit more comfortable about that.
Okay.
She was defanged. Oh, yeah, she was a trained snake. She was great, actually. I mean, you know,
oh.
I mean, I had never held a snake before, and I don't think I would do it again.
You know, well,
I really
have to
don't.
Tell you right now, well, at least you have done more than anybody, more than some people are going to do in a lifetime, because I don't know if I'll ever be able to, you know, hold a snake. I know my sister was fascinated with reptiles and of that nature. So the question that I have, okay, so you did the photo shoot, and then the album cover came out. What kind of feedback did you get about that picture?
Wow. Oh, if you can only imagine, I'm sure you can. I got called everything from a brazen temptress to I was in the Hustler magazine. I really don't know what they were trying to depict, but I didn't like it. You know, I didn't like
right.
it, and I didn't find out what they were doing until we had the press party in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, at a place called Someplace Else. And that's when everybody that was anybody came from the whole East Coast. We had Sleep the Limousine that night, from radio people, promotional people, everybody that was anybody was at my press party. And that's actually when I saw my album cover for the first time. And I was so disappointed. Oh, I was so disappointed because the record company did not confer with me to see whether or not I really was okay with it. And that was not the way that I wanted to be presented for my first time out. It absolutely was not. But years later, I look at it now as it was just a marketing strategy for the record company. And years later, people are saying they loved it. You know, they love it. It's something about the art form. I think it's more appreciated now than it was then, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because back then
it
was like a shock. It was, right. It was a, I guess if you could say that, maybe it was.
Well, I have to applaud your bravery. I mean, I guess you really have to love what you do, because sometimes the industry will come up with these, you know, concepts for an artist, and the artist sees himself one way, and the record company sees you another way. So for as a solo artist, because you kind of remind me, you favor Nona Hendricks in that Patti LaBelle.
Thank you.
And
She's
favor
my
her.
Favorite. They're my favorite.
Yeah. So was there a fight for your persona that you had to endure, or did you just say, no, this is how I want to be? Okay, we already know about the snake, the picture with you posing for the snake, but was that the end of it? Did you actually let them know, hey, this is how I want to be portrayed, or did you kind of just go along and do what you do?
Well, yeah, I just had to go along with it. I mean, Bob Reno, the owner, president of Midstrong Records, told me that night. He said, you know, Wardell, you know, it's already done. So I had to just be accepting, you know, sort of accepting of it. And, but you know what was so nice about it was that people were not really hard on me because of the album cover. I got mainly the support because people happened to like the music that they were hearing from my album. So I was grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. And what was the name of your album that first released as a solo?
The first release that was my first hit was called Captain Boogie. And the second one that was really the popular song that everybody really gravitated to was Super Sweet. It was called Super Sweet.
Mm-hmm. And so when Super Sweet hit, because I know that was wasn't that still in the 70s too, around the Studio 54 era? Okay.
Yes,
and
it was.
So,
1979. Mm-hmm.
And did you ever get a chance to perform at Studio 54?
I never got a chance to perform at Studio 54. I made an appearance at Electric Circus. I did Paradise Garage for Frankie Crocker twice in New York. I opened up for Sylvester at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. when he was with the Two Tons of Fun. You know, I did a lot of things with that single, but I never got to go to Studio 54.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that was one of those. And it's probably a good thing because, Lord knows, we heard about the debauchery going on up inside of Studio 54. You know, and it's synonymous with, you know, not only good music, but just wild times and, you know, a reckless type of living. So you opened up for Sylvester and Two Tons of Fun.
Yes,
so you
I
got
did.
A chance to meet. You got a chance to meet Sylvester. What kind of of person off the subject? What kind of person was Sylvester?
Oh, he was so nice. After this, well, actually, after my performance that that night, Sylvester came on after I came on, and I just wanted to give you just a little story about what happened to me with that show. The record company sent 2 songs for me to do, and they forgot to send Super Sweet, my hit record. And I knew everybody in D.C. was, you know, they wanted to hear Super Sweet. So what I did was I told the audience that I had a technical difficulty and that I was going to have to sing the song a cappella. And that's what I did. I sang the song a cappella. I told them to put their hands together, and I started singing Super Sweet. And the audience, when I finished, they went crazy. I mean, they gave me a standing ovation. It was just amazing, the response that I got doing the song a cappella. You know, I didn't have any music behind it. I just sang it from beginning to end, and they just clapped with me while I was singing. And I was so grateful. And when I came off stage, Sylvester gave me a thumbs up, and after the show, I met with him outside, and he just thanked me for being on his show.
Wow!
That's how gracious a person he was. And
wow.
I mean, I was such a big fan of his. I was so excited when the record company told me that he wanted me to open up for him, and I tell you, boy, that was like. That was an amazing opportunity for me. I still to this day, I have a picture of Sylvester and I together, and if you want, I'll be so happy to send you that picture
yes.
of he and I talking after
yes.
the show. He was
yes,
so nice. He was such a nice
person.
That.
Well, I have to tell
I
you
will.
Right now, thank you so much, and we'll go ahead and get that all arranged because I know that World Media is the reason why I am actually interviewing you today. So I just want to give a shout
yeah.
out to, you know,
yes,
World
yes.
Media. Yeah, from
yes,
in this
yes.
app. So I'd love to see that one. TV, the fans of TV One Unsung fan page would love that one to be able to
oh,
share.
Wonderful. Oh, wonderful.
With the fans.
Yeah.
Thank
you,
definitely.
Wayne. Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate it
yeah.
so much.
He's such a good guy. Just really, he's
yes.
really become a great friend. He's the one that actually
mm-hmm.
got Howard Hewitt on for me. He goes, "You want to talk to Howard Hewitt? Here, hold on." And so
oh,
that's
wow, that
how
is
Howard.
So nice.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. Howard Hewitt was like my very first mainstream performer. But
yeah.
what I want to go back to is to talk about just how incredible you are. See, it's one thing to do it in the studio, but to be
mm-hmm.
able to stand in front of an audience and sing
mm-hmm.
a cappella. And have them go
mm-hmm.
into a frenzy, you know, that
yeah.
is definitely
yeah.
a gift. It is a talent. So let's talk about that. So the
okay.
music industry today seems to be driven by visual as opposed to
mm-hmm.
stuff. Not all people out there doing it. You got the Erykah Badu, the Eric Benet, and, you know, these incredible
True.
Talents that are out there performing. But when
yeah.
you look at the industry of today versus
mm-hmm.
the industry of that era where people could
mm-hmm.
sing on a dime, you know, what is your perspective on it? Do you think things have gotten better for the better, or do you think that, you know, there's just such a straying away from the core of the soul?
Well, that's a great question. I think my answer to that is I understand why some people say what they say about the music that's out now, but I say that every generation has their own way of being creative, and, you know, they talked about us, too, back then, what we were doing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they really did, you know, and, there's some of the stuff that's out now that I can appreciate, and some of it, well, I don't so appreciate, but music has changed a little. One thing I am grateful for, though, is that they really love old school, and, you know, they're trying to bring that back now. And, you know, I really do appreciate that part of what the, you know, the younger generation is doing now with music, because we did have a lot to offer back then. Our music was really good music. And
yes, it was.
Yes, it was, you know, and I can appreciate a lot of the singers that are out there now. They have some great female and male singers out there now, and I think that they are really starting to really appreciate old school even more now than
mm-hmm.
I think they did maybe 10 years ago. And for that, I'm grateful. For that, I'm grateful.
Yeah,
it's given us an opportunity again, you know?
You know, it really is, and hopefully
yeah.
they're going to pay y'all like y'all deserve to be paid, you know, because
the
entertainers that just, yeah, you know, y'all need to
that
be paid.
That is so true, GD. You're right
yeah,
about that. That's the missing component.
Exactly.
We would have loved to have gotten, right.
Because
yeah, so
they're making ridiculous amounts of money. Ridiculous.
Yes, they are. They are, and we would love for them to pass some of that our way. Believe that.
mm-hmm.
Yes,
and you know
would.
What's coming? Hopefully, with shows like A Touch of Grace and TV One Unsung, you know, it's breathing life into something
mm-hmm.
that has already never lost life, and that is true soul music. Now, Mary J. Blige recorded or re-recorded "Let No Man Put Asunder." So, did you ever get a chance to meet her or?
No,
and
I've never met Mary. I've never met her, but I know I remember Rochelle speaking about Mary, and Rochelle is so proud of Mary J. Blige redoing the First Choices song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and when I
Rochelle
listen,
is very very happy about it.
When I listen to the vocals in "Let No Man Put Asunder," which I was actually able to get a clear listen to
mm-hmm.
with the a cappella version, I could see the similarities that Mary J. Blige's soul had
mm-hmm.
to Rochelle. I think that's what you said,
yeah.
Rochelle, that was the lead
yes,
on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah,
mm-hmm. Rochelle
so,
mm-hmm.
And so how do you feel about people, and I think you might have answered this, so hopefully I'm not being redundant. How do you feel about people picking up, you know, the music and redoing it?
I think it's a compliment, honestly, you know, that they love the music that
mm-hmm.
was, you know, from back in the day, and
mm-hmm.
they take it to another level. I think it's interesting how they're able to sample the music. I really think that's creative, what
mm-hmm.
they do. I took a course in college where I had to take, I took digital tech and learned
mm-hmm.
how to do the beats and all that. And that's pretty interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that even those of us that are old school should stay current,
mm-hmm.
you know, be open to the new stuff that's out there. You know, we wanted people to love what we were doing back then, and I think that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that's how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But still embrace and love what it is that you are, you know?
Right.
And so that's pretty much the way I see it. Yeah.
And so
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the First Choice, there was another song that was sampled also in a 90s rap song, I think it was rap or hip-hop. They did Love Thang. They did snippets of that song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And once
Love
again,
I
have to tell you right now, Lord knows James Brown's music has been sampled over and
how
over again.
It?
And you know, I just have to tell you, you know,
yes.
And then of course George Clinton, and it was just such sadness that that I heard about George Clinton and how his music, he really doesn't have the right to his music, so as sampled as it is, he's not really making the money. So has the music industry, Wardell, been lucrative for you that you could actually, you've actually made a living and can sustain yourself financially?
No, actually, no. My story is pretty much like everybody else's. You know, we wait for, you know, whatever we're entitled to every quarter, and, you know, we make our money from our appearances, and you know, we're still waiting for some other things to happen with that area of what goes to us, you know. It's pretty much an ongoing story for many, many artists. You'd be surprised the names, how many people are pretty much in the same boat, you know. But you know, the beautiful thing is that we had a love for what we do. And, mm-hmm. Sometimes, yes, it would have been nice to have been compensated the way we should have been compensated, but what is so beautiful about all of this is that we made history. You know, we really did, you know. And now we're in the history books, and people, you know, are acknowledging our efforts again after so many years, you know. I mean, some mm-hmm. people are forgotten, but for some reason we haven't, you know, our music has not been forgotten. So we're grateful for that. And hopefully mm-hmm. and prayerfully, you know, all those other things can be ironed out that we would really like to see happen. But, mm-hmm. you know, we're just really, really grateful that we were able to do what we wanted to do, which was music. So many people, a lot of people never get that opportunity, and we were blessed to be able to do what we loved. And now mm-hmm. we're doing it again, you know, so right. many years later, you know, it's coming right back full circle. So I'm really grateful, but no, you're right. You know, that has been pretty much that's the situation for many, many artists, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. It's just sad. So definitely, you know, my prayers I send up constantly. I mean, as I do more and more of the shows on Street Player with marvelous artists mm-hmm. such as yourself, you know, I have mm-hmm. just a sincere and devoted inspiration and appreciation for the sacrifices that you guys made, you know, living mm-hmm. life out on the road, you know, and performing yeah. night after night. And so just a mm-hmm. quick question about that touring thing that sure. I always wonder with each and every artist. So mm-hmm. is there ever a time when you just got tired? And if so, how did you hype yourself up to be able to go ahead and deliver?
Wow. Well, I mean, like the example that I gave you earlier about the Sylvester show and how the record company didn't send what they were supposed to send.
Right.
I knew
right.
that I couldn't go out there and not do my hit record. You know, it mm-hmm. was just something that I knew. And funny thing, Reuben Cross and John Fitch were at the show, and they said to me, they call me Wardy for short, and they said, Wardy, you can't go out there and sing that song without the music. I said, yes, I can, and I will. That's what my, you know, the people came here to hear my hit record, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to do that song, even though they didn't send the music, you know. It's just, you know, you just, you know what it is. Pretty much you're in sync with your, you know, with your the people that have followed your music. You know what it is that they want from you and what they expect from you, and you just go out and you do it, you know.
Right.
No question
right.
there.
You know, that's a true professional right there, definitely a true professional. Mm. I'll always remember that.
Okay.
And let's face it, you know, I love a cappella. Ironically, I opened up with an a cappella mm-hmm. version of Let No Man Put Us Under.
Yes,
so
you
I
did.
See someone on,
it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was
so
wonderful.
I see that there's
yeah.
someone on the switchboard. Would you mind talking to someone and answering a question?
Oh, certainly. I don't mind at all.
All right. Let's see who's joined us. 661-748,
okay.
You are on with Wardell Piper, a fresh first choice, do you have a question?
No, actually, I just wanted to say thanks for the music. You know, I'm a old Paradise Garage head, and I
all
grew
right.
up in that era. And, you know,
yeah.
in spite of all the things that go on, you know, money-wise, without you guys mm-hmm. making the music, my life would have been boring. So thank you for the music.
Thank you. What's your name?
Well, I call myself Joe Neckbone on BTR because I run a show here too. But at the end of the day, you know, without you guys enriching our lives with wonderful music that they still play to this day, you know, then life would have been so much different. So thank you for the music.
Thank you. No, thank you, Joe Neckbone. I really appreciate that, and I know the girls do too. We all thank you so very much for loving what we do. Honestly, we really appreciate you so much.
Hey, we appreciate you guys. You guys made
a
life living in New York one of the most magical moments, I tell you.
Wasn't
like nowhere
it?
Else.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yes, Paradise Garage. Boy, I remember that. I mean, when I performed there twice for Frankie Crocker, and I know the girls performed there as well when they were with South Soul Records, I mean, it was just the audience, the way that they received us was, oh, my God. I remember that as if it was yesterday. And I thank you all for giving us, you know, what you give us. It makes us want to go out there and do what we do.
Yeah, I'm an old guy now. I'm 53. And I tell these kids these days, you cannot imagine, you know, the connection that artists had with their audience in that kind of venue.
Yeah.
And you cannot imagine that time in New York when Frankie Crocker was on the radio. What you heard on the radio is what you heard in the clubs. And and you didn't have all this pre-programmed music. You didn't have a whole lot of this formula stuff. I mean, it was all original.
That's right.
And,
that's
yeah,
right.
And it, yeah, I can't put it into words. You know, when actually,
right.
when people in the hood listen to disco,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I tell folks,
mm-hmm.
you know, rap came out of disco, and, you
that's
know, you
right.
cannot dismiss its disco roots.
That's right. You're right. You're absolutely right, John. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it was a magical time, and I had stated before in another interview that we'll never see that ever again.
No.
You
no.
know? It was truly, truly, truly a real special time. And I embrace it, and I embrace you and everyone else out there that, you know, lived it, you know it, and, oh, I tell you, if we could just turn back the hands of time and let them see how much fun and the wonderful time that we had back then.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it,
you know, sadly,
unbelievable.
You know, yeah, sadly, you're never going to get another Grace Jones. You're never going to get another Sylvester. You're never going to get,
true.
You know, a group like you guys. You're never going to get a hit like
That's
Let No
true.
Man Put a Sunday that comes out
That's
of the clubs
true.
and literally kicks the door into radio. You're never going to have
That's
those
right.
kinds of opportunities and those kinds of moments that happen again. And it's sad to see all that pass. But I'm just glad I was there.
Yes, me too. I'm right there with you. Thank you so much.
I'll hang up and let you guys continue with your interview. I just wanted to tell you
thanks. All right, thanks a lot, Joe. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for your call. Thank you.
All right. I love that. That's exactly why I like doing this show. We've got somebody else holding. Let's see if we can get them on with us
right
now. Yes. 954-562, you're on with GD and Wardell Piper from First Choice. Do you have a question?
I just wanted to give a compliment. I am also from New York, grew up listening to Frankie Crocker, WWRL. And I tell you, you know, I'm an old school fan that you can't even believe. You know, it's like every once in a while I'll just go to YouTube and start reposting stuff that it's like the soundtrack of my life, really. And it's so funny that when I hear a certain song, I can tell you exactly the dance I was doing, exactly what club I was in, and sneaking in, by the way, because I wasn't really old enough to go to these clubs, but, you know, when you saw the stuff on TV and you heard the old head talking about it, you had to go see for yourself. And I also, my boys now are, you know, adult, and what I love doing is when they're in their rooms playing their music, and I'll come back and sit in the living room and put on the original version of that song, their sample, and it blows their mind, but it also gives them an education of where music really came from. And, you know, I tell you, I have, when your albums were out, the hustle was big in New York.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes.
And I used to win more dance contests because I was playing songs so much, I knew every beat, I would dip, I would swing. I mean, I knew every inch of those songs. And it was just such a great time in my life that I just wanted to call and say thank you for that.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you. What's your name?
My name is Deborah.
Deborah, I think it's wonderful that you play those original records for your sons so that they can know where the music originated.
Absolutely.
And the hustle, you know, and the hustle was just an amazing dance. I mean, anybody that could do that dance could really dance. I tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
That was an amazing dance.
Oh, yeah. And we danced from Queens, Manhattan. We were at the Garage. We were at Reflections.
Right.
We were at Tippins. We were everywhere.
Yes.
And,
wow.
You know, like I, and we also stayed really small because you can't be fat and dance. You know, it was like, that was the best exercise
and you're like,
okay. ever. I mean, I used to love it so much that I would risk getting in trouble because, like I said, I wasn't really old enough to get into certain clubs at that time. But I would risk a whooping just to get out and dance. I would do it. And it was, to me, it was so worth it. And, you know, it just tickles me so because my mom used to tell me all the time that I could dance before I could walk. So I think music, it just runs in my bloodstream, you know. It's just something
it.
I just have to do, you know. And like
it.
I said, that whole era, I could tell you what club I was in, what I was with. I can even remember the shoes I wore. Because there were certain shoes you can dance in and certain shoes you couldn't. And it's just such a great memory. It really, really is.
Yes.
All right.
And we'll have those memories forever, and that's what's so beautiful. And it
absolutely.
Is so nice that they do, you know, it's really nice that they have the social medias that we can go to and listen to the music and relive those memories all over again. You know, it's wonderful.
It's amazing.
I am so happy that you called. Yes, thank you so much for calling.
I'm so glad we had you on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I mean, you know, anybody that's from New York, they know it was a high time, a real high time in New York.
Oh, yeah. Frankie Crocker, WWRL, honey.
Yes.
I remember it.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Deborah.
All right.
You take
care. Okay, Wardell. I tell you right now, I just got chill bumps and I'm teary-eyed. I just love the love that they've shown you today because you are so deserving of that. And so as we wind down for the final questions of the interview, I want to thank Joe Neckbone and Deborah for calling in, supporting A Touch of Grace and supporting Wardell Piper and First Choice.
Yes.
So how can fans
reach out
to you and support? You're welcome. How can fans reach out to you and support your efforts right now?
I'm on Facebook. They can reach me on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter. And I just wanted to know if I could just mention a foundation that I'm a part of, the Gemma Foundation. They can go to thegemmafoundation.org and find out about this foundation, which was implemented by Dee Wellman and Maria Lazada, and they are doing so much for the arts. So much for the arts.
That'll be great.
To keep the arts
All right,
alive.
So, okay, can you spell that for the audience
the,
out there?
Yes. The Gemma, that's G-E-M-A, Foundation, FOUNDATION, .org.
Okay, great. And so, all right, so I have that down because I'm going to go ahead and share it on my Facebook pages as well. And the Gemma Foundation is keeping the legacy of R&B alive. Is that what's happening?
Actually, they're keeping the legacy of the art form of R&B, disco music, and other genres that were from, you know, when we were all doing our thing, alive.
All right.
And
well,
they can go to that website and find out a lot more about other things that are coming up. And I'll be doing a show in October, the 11th of October, in Wilmington, Delaware, at the Grand, with Evelyn Champagne King, Linda Clifford, Martha Wash, Carol Douglas, Carol Williams, Corey Day, Anita Ward. We're all going to be performing. And all of this is on the Gemma Foundation. The Three Degrees also will be on that show.
God, I got chill bumps when you started saying those names. Good Lord, that is going to be Dynamite show. It's on October 11th, 2014.
October 11th, 2014.
So you listeners out there, go to thegemmafoundation.org. That's T-H-E-G as in vote, E-M as in Mary, A, foundation.org. And show your support for Wardell Piper and all the great artists who are going to be coming out on the 11th and support the legacy and keep the art form of R&B and disco music alive. Because Ward knows it is definitely the foundation of a lot of music out here today. So, Wardell, you have been a fantastic guest here on A Touch of Grace. What is the best show on Blog Talk Radio?
Thank you so much, GD. I really appreciate you having me on your show. I really do.
Well, you're welcome. And so the question I have is, what is the best show on Blog Talk Radio?
Oh, absolutely. Your show.
A Touch of Grace. That's it. All right. So what I want to say is, on behalf of the audience and myself, I want to thank you and the ladies of First Choice for continuing to bring it good, soulful, deep, and rich. And I wish you the utmost success in the coming days, okay?
Thank you so much, GD. I'm going to be in touch with you so I can send you that photo of me and Sylvester, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. All right, thanks a lot. I'm going to let you go back to your afternoon, Wardell. God bless you, okay?
Thank you. God bless you, too. Thank you now.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is a show, another show that's going to go down in history. Love Deborah and the other gentleman, Joe Netbone, who actually called in. They talked about Paradise Garage and, you know, the party scene in New York. I just have to tell you right now, I closed my eyes and I actually saw those places. And in that I was I was old enough to get into a discotheque at the time. I just remember those fond memories. So Wardell Piper was just interviewed here on A Touch of Grace. So upcoming shows, keep your eyes peered on Facebook and Twitter for dates and time. My schedule is crazy right now, so please bear with me during the time until I get everything all sorted out. One thing that will be constant is that I will continue to do shows. If you want to find out if you missed an episode, you can tune in at http://www.blogtalkradio.com/authorGD Grace. And my special thanks go out to grand supporters of A Touch of Grace, George Livingston, celebrity photographer, Snowman, celebrity security and former bodyguard for James Brown for over 20 years, World Media, and last but certainly not least, the man who's sponsoring this show, A Touch of Grace. His name is Louis Randy Rand Wilkerson. He is the man behind the Coffee with God by Randy Rand. So if you haven't picked up that bit of wisdom and encouragement, do a search, a Google search for Louis Randy Rand Wilkerson, Coffee with God by Randy Rand, and you will find it. And so, on a final, in the late words of the wise Maya Angelou, I have been ending my show with this quote. It's more so as a reminder for me. When someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. Rest well, Maya Angelou. And listeners out there, thank you so much for making A Touch of Grace one of the most talked about radio shows on Blog Talk Radio. You take care. God bless.